Hey there, welcome back to the Greatest Mixtape Podcast. If you're joining us for the first time, welcome aboard. My name is Eric.
And my name is Mac.
Mac and I have been talking a lot about our love of the 80s.
Yes, we were texting over the holiday break just about random ass 80s bands. And our love for every one of them.
Yeah, we were talking about, a lot of these bands are touring again. You know, Motley Crue just announced they're doing another residency in Las Vegas.
And like Guns is touring again.
Yeah, it just kind of got us all fired up about, a lot of those bands that we loved growing up. So we thought maybe we'd do an episode talking about that.
Yeah, we got a little nostalgic about the 80s and, kind of going back to our roots.
Yeah, for sure.
And talking about some of these great 80s metal bands.
What we decided to do, though, is we're not going to focus on the biggies. We're not going to focus on what we call the A-listers. We're not going to talk about Motley Crue. We're not going to talk about Bon Jovi. We're not going to talk about Guns N' Roses.
Right.
The big bands. We're going to kind of focus on the B and C tier bands that maybe don't get enough love, or maybe there's some bands that will turn you on to that you don't know about or haven't heard in decades.
Honestly, we've spent a lot of time on this podcast talking about Motley Crue and Guns N' Roses. So it's...
I mean, there's still some big names on this list. Yeah. You're going to know some of these bands, but maybe there'll be a couple in there that maybe you're not so familiar
with. And just up front, we're going to set some expectations here. This may be controversial, but we're not going to talk about Skid Row. We love Skid Row. We worship Skid Row.
1,000%.
But we didn't really consider them part of the sort of, the party 80s kind of scene. They weren't really hair metal. They had a couple ballads, but...
They were definitely, I think, inspired by that movement, but to call them a hair metal band, they're just too heavy.
And you said once in conversation, Eric, about when they came out with Slave to the Grind, they went heavier. They went harder. They didn't kind of stay, in that sort of more poppy space that maybe you could say the debut album was in.
Yeah. A song like 18 in Life made them a ton of money. It gained them a ton of listeners. But instead of just rewriting, 18 in Life over and over again, they put out this even heavier fucking record.
Right.
And then they take Pantera out on tour. I mean... So they're as much as we love them, we're not going to talk about them today either, because I just we can't call them a hair band. We just can't.
Right. Same goes for like Queensryche.
They were more prog. They were just far too good to be quite
honest.
Yeah. With that said, Mac, you want to start us off?
Yeah, I'm going to get started here with, this could be a controversial pick. Some might argue that this band belongs up there with, the Motleys and the Bon Jovis.
Okay.
But maybe not. But that doesn't mean we don't love them. They just maybe weren't as successful as Motley Crue, Bon Jovi, Guns N' Roses. And that band is Poison.
Oh. Yeah, that's controversial, all right.
Yeah.
My God. Yeah, we had talked a bit about this earlier, and I was struggling with Poison, man. Because again, they were huge.
They were huge, but they weren't Motley level.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. So that's why we're starting out with talking about some Poison. Originally formed in Mechanicsburg, Pennsylvania, 1983, with Brett Michaels on vocals, Bobby Dahl on bass, Ricky Rocket on drums, and a guy named Matt Smith on guitar.
Yeah, I think he left the band because his name wasn't cool enough. I mean, you got Bobby Dahl and Ricky Rocket, and then Matt Smith.
Hi, I'm Matt Smith. The band moved to L.A. later that year in 83 and replaced Smith with a guy by the name of C.C. DeVille in 1985.
Much better name.
And of course, the band got huge. They went on to sell more than 40 million albums and DVDs worldwide. But let's talk about that debut album. Look What the Cat Dragged In, 1986. I remember getting that, someone showing me that either on cassette. I think it was a cassette.
Mm-hmm.
And I was with a bunch of guys. And I remember someone looking at the cassette and going, boy, those chicks are hot.
Yeah. Yeah. My first exposure to Poison was there was an ad for Look What the Cat Dragged In the back of either Metal Edge or Circus magazine or one of those, those magazines we used to read all the time. And now I'm going to caveat this, but it was just this little tiny ad in the corner. No, it was a pretty decent size, full color image. And I did the same thing. I specifically remember thinking Ricky Rocket was hot. Because I legit thought they were girls, man.
Right. I mean, so if you've forgotten, go look it up. Go check out that album cover.
Yeah.
That's something. But hey, man, that was what was going on at the time. And those guys owned it. And they just kicked ass. I mean, some of the songs in that first album, Cry Tough, I Want Action, I Won't Forget You, the title track, Look What the Cat Dragged In, Talk Dirty to Me, and one of my favorites. It wasn't a big hit, but was a song called Number One Bad Boy.
Yeah, dude.
And I loved it because, Eric, you used to work at a grocery store, and you used to sing Number One Bag Boy.
I was the number one bag boy. That's right. I had forgotten all about that. That's amazing.
It was fun about, I mean, obviously, everything about them is fun, and you'll notice, if you think about it, there's, especially when you get into their second and third album, there's this working class sort of message that they keep putting out. It's about having a good time, but it's about working hard and overcoming. So it was easy for people to fall in love with this band. You watch those, like those videos, even from like Talk Dirty to Me, and already they know how to play to the cameras.
Yeah.
They're always making eye contact with the camera. They're always putting on those pouty lips, and like they knew immediately how to sell their image.
Yeah. As far as musicianship goes, and they'll be the first to say it. I'm not saying anything out of school or anything. They're not the most accomplished musicians, you know, especially amongst some of their peers. You know, there are a lot of really, really talented musicians that played that form of music. I know a lot of people write hair metal off as being cheesy and whatever, but I mean, if you really listen to the musicianship of a lot of those bands, there were some serious players back then. And Poison, they weren't these virtuoso players, but goddamn, they could write songs, hooky, catchy songs, and they knew how, like you said, how to work a room, how to work a stage. I remember going to see them live in concert and just being blown away at how much people got into the show, because they were just up there having a fucking ball, man. And people feed on that. They feed on that energy, you know?
I remember a while back, I saw an interview with Bobby Dahl, and he said, because he was talking about people bagging on him for maybe not being the greatest musicians in the world.
Yeah.
And he said, hey, man, I didn't get into this to be a musician. I got into this to be a rock star.
Yeah, like, I remember that quote. Yes.
Yeah.
It's perfect. That sums it up.
I get a little tired sometimes of everybody bagging on these bands for maybe not being virtuosos.
Right.
You talk about like punk rock and, you know, like the Sex Pistols and Sid Vicious, you know, he couldn't play bass. They would actually like turn his amp off when they were playing live. Yeah. And nobody bags on them for not being virtuosos. But for some reason, these 80s metal bands, if they weren't all fucking Yngwie Malmsteen.
Right.
You know, then they were just shit, you know.
Yeah, it is a little ridiculous. When grunge came along, because I mean, let's face it, grunge killed the whole, you know, hair movement. Everybody rebelled against that. And all of a sudden, all of those musicians, all of those bands were shit. You know, a lot of us were listening to those bands, and then still I embraced grunge when it came out. I loved it. There were some of those bands I was absolutely just blown away by, but I didn't turn my back on the things I grew up on. Right. Did it start to sound a little silly compared to some of the serious music that was coming out? Yeah, okay, it did. But to just, you know, all these guys and girls that were, you know, all into the grunge thing, claiming they never listened to hair bands are just full of shit.
Yeah.
Like, you didn't listen to music until Nirvana came along? I find that really hard to believe.
Right.
So if you were listening to rock in those years, you were listening to Motley Crue and Poison and bands like that. You were.
And even at the time, all those, you know, grunge sort of bands that came out in the 90s, they didn't say that they listened to that 80s metal, but now, later in life, they're fully admitting that, hell yeah, we listen to that stuff.
1,000%. Yeah. Yeah, I saw one recently. I think it was Jerry Cantrell from Alice in Chains? It might have been Jerry, but he was saying how, you know, we had to pretend we hated all that stuff. He said, but secretly we were all listening to, like, what's Warren DeMartini from Rat doing? Right. You know, and like focusing and studying their solos and all those things, because, you know, Warren was an amazing guitar player.
Yeah.
Or still is. Yeah. But yeah, so a lot of those bands, that's where they came from. Go on YouTube and look up Layne Staley before Alice in Chains. He had poofy hair and was in like a hair band.
Yeah.
You know, so again, these grunge guys, they didn't come out of the womb like that. Right. You know what I'm saying? There was an evolution. Mainstream America didn't realize there was an evolution because it seemed like it just came out of nowhere overnight. You know, but that's just not the case. You know, a lot of those guys were playing in bands that we would call hair bands. And then, you know, they evolved into the grunge thing. It was just a progression. But
yeah, man, just, you know, back to Poison, you know, that along comes the second album, Open Up and Say Ah, with the controversial, you know, cover on the album, the artwork.
So silly.
1988. But again, Nothing But a Good Time, Fallen Angel, Every Rose Has Its Thorn. They did the Loggins and Messina cover, Your Mama Don't Dance.
Yep.
That's another great album, just loaded with good time rock songs. Yeah.
Every Rose Has Its Thorn. Jesus Christ, that thing was on MTV every like 10 minutes. That sold them, you know, some albums too, man.
Yeah.
Good God, that song was huge.
And I love the video for Nothing But a Good Time. You know, the beginning with the guy that owns the restaurant just yelling at the guy who's washing dishes.
Yeah.
So yeah. Great. Kicks the door down and there's the band. But they followed that up with 1990's Flesh and Blood. Again, a bunch of hits on that one. Unskinny Bop, which I can pass on. but Something to Believe In.
Yeah,
and
that's a big one.
My personal all-time favorite Poison jam, Ride the Wind.
Oh, that was a good one too. Yeah,
I love Ride the Wind.
Yeah,
but hey, I know, again, a lot of, you know, the maybe the music snobs out there kind of look down their noses at bands like Poison, but
yeah,
you know the songs. Even if you are one of those snobs, you know, you know the songs, you know how great they are and how much fun that band is.
Yeah, yeah. And again, when you look at albums sold and all of that, how many, you know, top 10 or 20 singles they had, it's tough to put them in that B category. But getting back to the original point of this episode, you're right. They just, as big as they got, mm-hmm. they didn't quite get that Bon Jovi level, you know?
Right, right.
Yeah. And I mean, that's, I mean, it was a pretty high bar, you know? And I guess there's a reason, you know, when they do these like summer tours, like for the last couple of years and stuff, that Poison's opening for Motley Crue on these tours and Def Leppard and, you know, bands like that. Def Leppard's another one. They're an A-list band. But that's not to say we don't have love for Poison, man. They were great.
Yeah, so much fun.
Absolutely.
Nothing but a good time.
Well, that was controversial. I'm going to give you that. And my first pick here is also going to be a bit controversial because it's very similar in the fact that this band was big. They sold a lot of records, but again, we've talked about this on this podcast, that I just always felt like they were just a half step behind the Motley Crues and the bands like that. And I'm talking about Rat. Mm-hmm. I love Rat. Mm-hmm. Don't get it twisted. Had some amazing records. The first string of, like, I think they had like the first four or maybe even five records were phenomenal.
Yeah.
You know, churning out hits, all of that stuff. But again, there was just something about Rat to me. They just always seemed a little bit, you know, just a half a step behind, you know, the bigger bands. So yeah, Rat was actually formed in 1976, believe it or not, by Stephen Piercy, the lead singer.
What?
I know, it's hard to believe. The band became Mickey Rat in 1976, and then by 77, it had been shortened to just Rat.
Just grinding for years to make that band happen.
Yeah, dude. LA must have been nuts back then, because if you look at the list of people who have been in that band, I mean, there's been like 50 people that were in and out of the, you know, that band, or, you know, the LA Guns or Guns N' Roses or all of those LA bands in the late 70s, early 80s. It was so incestuous, and people would play. They'd be in this band for 1 week and then they'd jump ship and go over to this band. I mean, Jakey Lee was in Rat at one point, later went on to play with Ozzy.
No shit.
Yeah, it's just nuts to do the deep dive and read, you know, who's been in and out of that band, but unbelievable. But of course, the classic lineup was Stephen Piercy on vocals. You've got Robin Crosby on guitar and Warren DeMartini on guitar, drummer Bobby Blotzer and bass player. And, can you help me out? Mm. Been listening to Rat for over 40 years.
Yeah.
Juan Crozier? I've never known how to pronounce dude's last name, man.
It's one of those two.
Close enough. We're just going to say Juan on bass. They released their first album in 1983. It was actually an EP. It was their first, you know, self-titled EP. Sold over 100,000 records.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I loved about the self-titled EP, I don't know if you remember the album cover. Album covers were so great back then.
No, I know.
It was just this very attractive pair of legs in high heels with little white rats like climbing up the fishnets.
Of course.
Fun fact, Tawny Kitaen's legs.
Come on.
Tawny Kitaen's legs. She was dating Robin Crosby, one of the guitar players at the time.
Wow.
And then she returned to be on the cover of the first full-length album, Out of the Cellar.
That's her?
Tawny. That's her on all fours, kind of like kneeling in the trap doors over the rat. Yeah, that's Tawny Kitaen.
Oh, no shit.
Who, you may remember, was the video vixen for Whitesnake's videos, because she then was with David Coverdale. She's on the hoods of the Jaguars
or something. Yeah.
You know, much like Poison, sold a shit ton of records,
yep.
Tons of singles. They were on MTV. They were all over the place.
Out of the Cellar, Round and Round.
Yeah.
I mean, it's still relevant today. You still hear it in commercials. You hear it in movies. You hear it in TV shows. Like, that song has stood the test of time.
Yes, it was in a Geico commercial a couple years ago.
Yep.
That peaked when it was first released at number 12 on the Billboard Hot 100. And then in 2020, it hit the Billboard Rock charts again, peaking at number 18 because of that Geico commercial. Isn't that cool?
That's awesome. And great video with Milton Berle.
Oh, Milton Berle and drag. And so great. Yeah, VH1 actually voted Round and Round number 61 in the greatest hard rock songs of all time. So there you go.
Man, what a band. I mean, Dance, 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 Way Cool Junior.
Way Cool Junior.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Just sitting here thinking now they're all coming back like You're in Love. Like another great rat song. They were such a good band, man. Love,
Lay It Down.
Lay It Down, yes.
And their videos were amazing, too.
Yep.
But I mean, I Want a Woman. I mean, they had so many hit songs.
Yeah, yeah.
But again, back to my original point, just always felt they were just a little bit, you know, behind the other bands of the A tier, as we call it.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
But still love Rat, man.
Yep.
Great, great band.
Yeah. Awesome. All right. Let's go with LA Guns.
Oh, dude.
Oh, dude. One of my favorite bands of that era.
Yeah, still mine too. I love them. I love them.
But the history of LA Guns is way too complicated to fully explain.
It's like Rat. There were a million people in that band.
Yeah, it will take a half hour to do just that, but so many musicians in and out. Mm-hmm. But basically, guitars. You know, Tracy Guns formed LA Guns. Axl Rose joined in 1984 after his band Hollywood Rose broke up.
That's wild.
Then Hollywood Rose later reforms. Tracy Guns joins back up with Axl.
Yep.
And they rename the band Guns N' Roses.
Get it?
Tracy and Axl have a falling out. Tracy leaves and then goes on to reform LA Guns in 1986.
Wow. Yeah, that's wild.
If you didn't know how the name Guns N' Roses came about, there you have it.
Tracy Guns and Axl Rose.
Yeah. But they again had a few more lineup changes before their debut album, self-titled LA Guns, finally came out.
Yeah.
In 1988, which is sort of their classic lineup with Phil Lewis on vocals. Phil had been around a while. He was in a band back in England named Girl with Phil Collin of Def Leppard.
That's wild.
Yeah, that's a fun fact.
Yeah.
Phil Lewis on vocals, Tracy Guns, of course, lead guitar. You had Mick Cripps on rhythm, Kelly Nichols on bass, and you had Nicky Alexander on the album. But as soon as the album was released, he's replaced by Steve Riley, and that's the classic LA Guns lineup.
Yeah. Yeah. And Steve Riley came out of Wasp. He was in Wasp before LA Guns.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep.
Man. but that first album is just incredible. I still listen to it to this day. I listen to it a lot. I mean, you have songs like No Mercy, Sex Action, One More Reason, Electric Gypsy.
Electric Gypsy. I love that song.
One of my favorite guitar riffs of all time.
Yeah, for sure.
Nothing to Lose, Bitch Is Back. Just loaded. That album from start to finish is just incredible. Followed it up in 1989, Cocked and Loaded. Again, big hits, Rip and Tear, Never Enough. And then, of course, you know, they had to put out the ballad, right?
Of course, yes.
Yeah, Ballad of Jane,
yeah,
which was their biggest hit ever, hit number 33 on the Billboard Hot 100.
Yeah.
So, trust me, if all you know of LA Guns is, oh, they were the band that sang Ballad of Jane, yes.
Right.
But please go back and do the deep dive. Go back to that first album, and it's going to blow your fucking mind.
Yeah. What was cool about them to me was they just always had, they were a little dirtier.
They were grittier.
You know, they were grittier, and, you know, while they still had, you know, the hair and stuff like that, they weren't pretty. They were more like sleazy, gutter type rock. You know, it wasn't Poison, it wasn't Pretty Boy Floyd, or, you know, a lot of those bands that were really pushing the makeup and the big hair and all that stuff. Like, LA Guns was always just a little just sleazier and dirtier to me.
And that's what just drew me to them. They weren't as polished. They were just dirty and nasty. And
they looked like they stunk. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Those leathers hadn't been washed in years, dude.
Exactly. And I mean that in a great way, though. I'm not trying to insult the band. They just, you know, they had that edge, man. And they, I mean, that's what Guns N' Roses had. I mean, it was a very similar, you know, it was the seedier side of LA, you know?
Right. Yeah.
I loved them for that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, 1991, Hollywood Vampires had Kiss My Love Goodbye, another great song. But I got to see LA Guns the summer of 2023, so just about a year and a half ago.
Nice.
Phil Lewis and Tracy Guns were the only original members.
Right.
Members, rather. Yep. But they did have Ace Von Johnson on guitar,
yeah,
which was
he's
great.
Cool.
Yeah. But, and of course, they sounded awesome. The show was fantastic. They played all the hits that you wanted to hear.
Yeah.
But before the show starts, like, the house music comes off.
Right? Okay.
And, you know, the lights come up on the stage, and their PA, you know, LA Guns, their PA kicks in, and then you hear Diary of a Madman by Ozzy start to play.
Okay, that's cool.
Tracy Guns comes out on stage and plays the whole song note for note.
What?
Along with the, you know, the recording on the PA.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And for all the music nerds in the crowd, I'm just like nerding out, like, you're watching Tracy Guns up there playing Diary of a Madman just live.
That's cool.
Like, I'm like, whoa, because Tracy's playing Randy. Like, oh my God, this is incredible. And it was such a cool thing. You could tell, like, some people in the crowd weren't digging it. Like, they were, you know, he could have played Crazy Train or something a little bit more upbeat.
Right, right.
But the fact that he was like, no, I'm playing Diary and I'm playing it start to finish.
That's cool, man. Yeah. He could have easily just done, like, you know, the main riff or whatever or verse. Right. But no, he plays the whole song.
The whole damn song.
That's fantastic.
It was fantastic, man. He was
Hell
great.
Yeah. That's fucking cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. Love that, Bam.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Anyone out there, if you don't know, go back. Listen to the first album, self-titled LA Guns. It's incredible.
It's these episodes, man. It gets me all fired up because, like, you know, we record at night. And when we're done recording, I'm pretty beat and I want to go to bed, but I want to listen to all this music that we talk about. Cause, like, I haven't listened to LA Guns in a while.
Yeah.
Just, yeah. It made me realize, I'm like, shit, I haven't put that on in quite a while. Now I want to go listen to that. I'll be up till 2 in the morning. Well, another band that kind of came from that same scene, and they kind of straddled that line too. They weren't quite as dirty and sleazy as LA Guns, but they weren't quite as pretty as Poison either. They were kind of in between, and I'm talking about Faster Pussycat.
Man.
Love Faster
Oh
Pussycat.
Oh my God, what a band.
Fantastic band. Yeah, another LA band. I mean, 99% of the bands we're going to talk about tonight are they're LA bands, or they were formed somewhere else and moved to LA to find the road to fame. But yeah, Faster Pussycat is LA to the bone. Formed in 1985 by the greatest name in rock and roll history. And I've heard it pronounced Tame Me Down and Tie Me Down. Either way, whatever you want to call them, it's a fantastic name. And guitarists Greg Steele and Brent Muscat, and bassist Kelly Nichols, who went on to play with LA Guns.
LA Guns.
So yeah, again, man, the incestuous LA metal scene of the 80s was just crazy. Yeah, had a string of great albums. Their first one came out in 1987. It was Faster Pussycat, followed by Wake Me When It's Over in 1989. Whipped came out in 1992. And then, again, one of the greatest names, they put out an album in 2006 called The Power and the Glory Hole. Fantastic. And if you know anything about Faster Pussycat, their lyrics are all very like double entendre and, you know, sexual innuendo. And
dude, slip of the tongue.
Slip of the tongue. With a slip of the tongue, I'm in deep shit. I'm so bad off I can taste it. I mean,
yeah,
that's fantastic. They have a song called Little Dove, which is about the porn star Jeanette Little Dove. Tammy may or may not have had a thing with her. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, everything was done with a wink. Yeah. Sold over 2 million records worldwide. So again, we're not talking Bon Jovi numbers or anything, but I mean, had a good career. They were signed to Elektra Records, toured with Alice Cooper, David Lee Roth. And this is my favorite. They actually opened for Motorhead. Can you imagine Motorhead fans and Faster Pussycat comes out on stage? Dude, they must have been like, what the fuck is this? Their follow-up album, which came out a couple years later, was Wake Me When It's Over, like I said, and earned gold status in the United States. And they, too, had their ballad, and it was their biggest song of their career, House of Pain. Again, got them a lot of attention. Poison Ivy was on that record as well.
Yep.
Shortly after that, they recorded for Elektra's 40th anniversary. There was a compilation album that came out, and they did a cover of Carly Simon's You're So Vain. And it is fucking fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. We talked about that on our covers episode.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
So, yeah, Faster Pussycat. If you're not familiar with them, go check them out.
Dude, that first album, start to finish.
It's so good.
Yeah, I can listen to the whole thing.
Yeah.
Don't Change That Song, Smash Alley. like you said, Cat House, Babylon.
Yeah, Babylon.
Ricky Rackman scratching. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, but wow, that straight all the way through that album is just kick-ass. I love that album.
Yeah, just bluesy rock and roll.
Heard Poison Ivy the other day driving around, and I was just, okay, volume up.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a fun song.
It's just fun. Yeah.
Yep.
All right. So now we're going to go to another band that everybody... Well, mostly everybody's familiar with. You should be.
Okay.
This band formed back in and around the Philly area in 1983. Their most well-known successful lineup, you know, with Tom Kiefer on vocals, Eric Brittingham on bass, Jeff Labar on guitar, and Fred Curry on drums. I'm talking about Cinderella.
Yeah, dude.
Awesome band. Awesome.
Yeah,
band.
Cinderella band. Was a lot of fun.
Yeah. You know, debut album, Night Songs, 1986. Peaked at number 3 on the charts, went triple platinum.
Wow.
Yeah, that's huge. I mean, and you had the title track, Night Songs. You had Shake Me.
Shake Me was huge.
Oh, Nobody's Fool.
Yep.
Somebody Save Me. And Just for Fun, Push, Push.
Yeah.
But yeah, that Night Songs, love that album still to this day. Yeah, just great, great stuff. You know, but then you see the Long Cold Winter comes out in 1998, also goes triple platinum, but it's a little bit more blues-based.
Yeah, for sure.
Than Night Songs. They kind of, you know, it was still kind of heavy at times, but a little bit more blues-based.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the opening, the Bad Seamstress Blues, falling apart at the seams. Killer fucking intro. It's my favorite Cinderella song. Right?
Yeah, that's
great.
You had
that bluesy, cool intro, and then that kick drum fires up.
Yeah.
That monster guitar riff comes in. I love that song. It's so good. But that also featured Gypsy Road, Don't Know What You Got Till It's Gone, Last Mile, Coming Home, just loaded with hits.
Yeah.
And they followed that up in 1990 with Heartbreak Station. More Things Change, Shelter Me, Heartbreak Station. So again, you know, it was again a little bit more bluesy, some piano. Thrown in there on some of those songs, some, you know, sort of different backing vocals on some of those songs. So they were just kind of evolving their sound as they went.
Sure.
But those first three albums, can't go wrong. Got to see him live back in the day. It was 1991.
Oh, wow.
It was a tour with David Lee Roth, Cinderella, and Extreme.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Holy shit.
Yeah.
Again, man, I've said it before, I'll say it again a million more times, but your memory blows my mind.
And I've done enough damage to the brain cells over the years where I shouldn't be able to remember anything.
Man, it's impressive.
Man, but yeah, man, hey, Cinderella was, again, you can be a snob and you can look down at them and everything, but I'm telling you, those songs kick ass. Those first three albums are fantastic.
And, you know, it's funny too, and I think that they're one of those bands that I think people can crack on them or write them off or whatever because, you know, how they looked, especially that the first album, you know, they were fully embracing, you know, the glam thing. But man, if you just, you put a band out on stage in, you know, jeans and boots and t-shirts and play Cinderella's music, they're just a rock band. They're just a really good rock band.
Yeah.
You know, they were a little different from most of the glam stuff that was happening as far as I'm concerned. And then again, they went even further down that road and got bluesier and, you know, the hair got a little flatter and, you know, they started kind of doing the cowboy boots and hats thing. And I mean, it wasn't quite country, but you know, they got bluesier and more rock. I mean, but that first album, you can't deny that they were a hair band.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Later on down the road, they got just a little more rock and roll. But
you think they inspired Metallica with those cowboy boots and hats and stuff? Like,
for sure. Moving on to another LA band, again, formed in 1976.
Damn.
Which blows my mind because they didn't really, you know, get popular until the 80s. But man, just cutting their teeth from the mid 70s. And I'm talking about Dokken.
Yes.
Believe it or not, man, Dokken goes back to, 1976. Another one of those bands that, you know, people were in and out of it over the years before the lineup finally gelled. And, you know, Don Dokken, of course, on vocals. George Lynch, the monster shredder guitar player. I can't tell you how many guitar players I knew back in those days that just worshipped him. Like, he was a god. He was like the second coming of Eddie Van Halen to a lot of up-and-coming guitar players. Man, George Lynch was just insane. Of course, Mick Brown on drums and Jeff Pilson on bass. Unfortunately, you know, they had that singer guitar player when they were gelling, they were amazing, but just so much beef that it finally was the undoing of the band. But along the way, I mean, their first album came out in 1981. It's called Breaking the Chains. Fun fact, it was originally released as Don Dokken.
Oh.
I don't know if there's any actually in print out there that you can find, but I bet they'd be worth some money. They shortened it later to simply Dokken. So then in 1984, they released their second album, Tooth and Nail, which had the singles Just Got Lucky, Alone Again. Remember Alone Again, dude? That song was huge. Into the Fire, sold over 1 million copies in the U.S. alone, peaked at number 49. So, I mean, a big, big record for them. Followed by 1985's Under Lock and Key, my favorite Dokken record. It's got In My Dreams, The Hunter, It's Not Love. Do you remember the video?
Yeah.
They're on the flatbed truck cruising flatbed down truck. Like Sunset Strip, dude. And they were just performing on the back of this truck. So cool, man. During this time, you know, they were touring with Judas Priest, AC/DC, Aerosmith, Dio, Kiss. I mean, they just, again, were blowing up. Ended up doing the theme song for Nightmare on Elm Street 3, Dream Warriors.
Yes.
Another great one. Great video, too. Then they released Back for the Attack in 1987 with the singles Burning Like a Flame, reached number 20, Heaven Sent, Prisoner, made it up to number 37. Album reached number 13 on the U.S. charts. Then they did the Monsters of Rock tour.
Yes.
I believe you saw it. Did you see that?
No, I did not.
You didn't. Okay. I know Bob went to it. I couldn't remember
Bob
if
Bob
went with him or not. Okay. It was 1988. Van Halen, Scorpions, Metallica, Kingdom Come, and Dokken. I mean, what a great, great lineup that was.
Damn.
And then they released a live album, Beast from the East, in 1988. Went gold in the United States. And then the wheels started to come off. The creative differences, the infighting, the power struggles. Again, it was, you know, Don Dokken and George Lynch just two big egos. So they ended up breaking up. Over the years, they'd get back together here and there or guest appear on each other's records. They did release a couple more Dokken records over the years, but nothing, you know, like those first formative years of that band. And, you know, they certainly had the talent to have been one of those A-tier bands, but just for whatever reason, I always kind of hung out in that B to C category, never quite cracked that huge, huge mainstream, you know, success, but great, great band.
Great band. Well, I got to say it. Rocking with Dokken.
I mean, yes, when your band name rhymes with it, rocking, I mean, come on.
But I saw this interview with Don Dokken years ago, and I didn't realize it, of course, until he said it. But the majority of his song titles had four syllables. Now think about it.
Oh my God, never realized that.
Right, and he did that on purpose. He just by you know his vocal style and his writing style, it just worked better for him. But now go back and look at all their hit songs, and they're all four syllable titles.
Oh my God, that's hysterical.
All right, I'm going to go now to a band that did not start out as a quote hair metal band.
Okay.
Another one that goes back to the 70s, originally formed in London in 1978 as the backing band for a guy named David Coverdale.
Oh, yeah.
And he had just left Deep Purple.
Yep.
And Coverdale's been the only constant member throughout the band's history.
Sure.
They put out a few albums between 78 and 1984. You know, up to that point, they were pretty well known for Slide It In, that album.
Yeah, that was probably the biggest up until that point.
They had, you know, featured the title track, plus Love Ain't No Stranger, Slow and Easy.
Yep.
Great rock and roll songs, but not hair metal.
Right.
Right?
Until.
And then 1987 hits, and the self-titled album Whitesnake comes out.
Good Lord.
Sells 8 million copies. Peaked at number 2 on the charts. Now, here's where it gets even better, because the album itself, the recording, of course, featured Coverdale on vocals.
Yeah.
John Sykes on guitar, Neil Murray on bass, Ainsley Dunbar on drums. And you're all
monster
going,
players.
Who?
Yeah.
Because most people got to know a much different version of the band through the videos with, of course, Coverdale, but Rudy Sarzo on bass.
Yeah.
Rudy from Ozzy and Quiet Riot.
Quiet Riot.
Tommy Aldridge on drums.
Also Ozzy.
Also Ozzy. And both Vivian Campbell and Adrian Vandenberg on guitar.
Mm-hmm.
So
Vivian Campbell came from Dio.
Yeah, exactly. And so those poor guys that played on the album, no one ever got to know them.
Yeah.
Everybody it's got crazy, to know the guys it? In the video. But it was those videos that kind of, you know, eased them into that sort of more hair metal All teased up and everyone's looking so pretty.
Yeah.
But the songs were so damn good too.
Oh man, Still of the Night.
Still of the Night.
Are you kidding me?
Oh my God, it's still like, yeah, that riff comes back in after Come Over Here, Baby, and then
I mean, it's very, and I know that they heard this their whole career, so he's probably sick of hearing it, but you can't deny it. It's very Led Zeppelin-esque.
Ooh,
That song.
Totally.
Yep.
But hey, amazing. It works, man. Totally. Monster song.
Big time.
And of course, on that album, you still had Here I Go Again, mm-hmm, which has had this resurgence in popularity. Again, I think it was a car insurance commercial, probably a Geico.
Oh, sure. But yeah, probably.
Yeah.
And again, Tawny Katane on the hoods of the car.
Yes, exactly. Tawny Katane. Is This Love? Give Me All Your Love. Like, a lot of loving going on in this album. But again, just still, everyone knows these songs.
Yeah.
Everyone, I don't care. People that are, you know, in their 20s right now know the words to Here I Go Again.
Yeah.
Right? I mean,
oh yeah,
it just sticks around.
Movies, TV shows, commercials, like you said. Yeah.
Yep.
Absolutely.
And like you said, you can't mention Whitesnake without the videos and Tawny Katane. And,
yeah,
you know, as a young man watching those videos made you feel a certain way.
Right. For sure.
Got
for
you
sure.
More and more into Whitesnake.
Oh, yeah.
And actually, Eric, you know, we mentioned this in our very first episode. We saw them open for Motley Crue.
We did.
On the Girls, Girls, Girls tour in 1987, yes. Dude.
Yeah, that's wild, man.
Yeah, man. What a God show that was.
That was an amazing show, too. Holy cow. God.
But,
man.
But yeah, they put out, you know, the follow-up to that with 1989, Slip of the Tongue.
Yep.
Campbell and Vandenberg are out, replaced by Steve Vai.
Steve fucking Vai, dude.
Yes.
What?
Yeah.
Talk about a freaking super group, man.
No shit, dude. They still went on to sell 4 million copies.
Yep.
Fool for Your Loving, The Deeper the Love. Again, there's a love theme.
He does love love.
Yes. Mr. Coverdale is quite amorous.
Yes.
But I mean, you can't deny, even if you just focus on the self-titled Whitesnake album.
Yeah.
They deserve their place in music history. Just that album.
110%.
Oh my God. This, again, yeah. Still the Night, Here I Go Again. You could just take those two,
mm-hmm,
and just, oh my God, what amazing songs.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, coming out of, you know, he'd been around, man. I mean, Deep Purple. I mean, he, you know, Coverdale knew his shit by then.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
And the dude knows how to write a song and write a hook and such a powerful singer too. Ooh. Oh my God. That man had such an amazing voice. He's still out touring. I don't know. I can't speak on his vocal abilities these days. I mean, he's getting up there in age, but he's still out there doing it. God bless him for that. And even if he's half as good as he was back in the 80s, you know, God bless him, because that guy could sing his ass off.
Incredible stage presence. Whole package.
Yep. Yeah, for sure.
All right, Eric, what do you got next?
All right. So we made a joke many moons ago on this podcast how being the Prince fan that I am, I'm going to find a way to work Prince into every episode, no matter what we're talking about.
Here we go.
So there is a Prince connection with my next band here. Formed in 1984 in Hollywood, California. Bunch of young gentlemen. They were known as Warrant.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah.
That's okay. Let's hear this connection. Come on.
All right. Okay. So the Warrant Prince connection goes like this. Their manager, Warrant's manager, somehow, I don't know this part of the story, but somehow got the ear of Prince's people and Prince himself. And Prince was actually looking to sign a rock band to his Paisley Park record label. You know, predominantly funk and, you know, that genre. But I mean, Prince was a rocker too, man. I mean, you know, watch him play live. Tell me he's not into rock too. And, he wanted to, you know, spread his, wings a little bit and work with a rock band. So somehow somebody got, some of Warrant's songs, you know, to Prince. And so Prince funded their demo. He gave him $5,000. And they recorded three songs, went into a professional studio, recorded three songs. Prince, again, was interested. He funded it and everything. And then he saw video. They had shot video of a performance. And when Prince saw them performing, he decided to pass. And the quote was, band's got a lot of potential. They're really good. White boy can sing, but motherfucker can't dance. And he decided to pass. But being the philanthropic guy that he was, he let them take, you know, keep the demo that they recorded and shop it. And it led to their record deal. And so yeah, those songs ended up on Dirty, Rotten, Filthy, Stinkin' Rich, which was their first full length album after getting a record deal. So there's your Prince connection, man.
That's fucking incredible.
We're gonna do an episode on like thrash metal, and I'm gonna figure out a way to like shoehorn Prince in there somehow.
Okay, today we're doing an episode on Norwegian death metal, and somehow Eric.
Well, you know Prince. Oh man. But yeah, Warrant was another one of those bands that just had all of the parts. Mm. You know, they had the talent, they had the good-looking frontman who could, you know, write killer hooks and you know, could write these sort of, you know, sensitive love ballady type things and then still turn around and write, you know, like a kick-ass rock song.
Yeah.
And for whatever reason, they never quite made that.
Yeah.
That big break. But yeah, like I said, Dirty, Rotten, Filthy, Stinkin' Rich was their first album released in 1989. Instantly successful, charted at number 10 on the Billboard 200. Had four hit singles, Heaven, the power ballad, mm-hmm. Heaven. Sometimes She Cries,
oh
another
my.
Ballad. Yep, wow, no, went to yes. number 27. Down Boys.
Yep.
And then Big Talk, which was the fourth single off of that record. So yeah. Again, yeah, I mean, sold a bunch of records right out of the gate. And then in 1990, released their follow-up, Cherry Pie, which was the kiss of death.
Yeah.
That poor guy, man. Janie Lane, lead singer, main songwriter. The album was originally supposed to be called Uncle Tom's Cabin. There's the song on the album, Uncle yeah. Tom's Cabin, and it's a gritty rocker. You know, it's yep. a really, really good song, heavy guitars. But the record label, they were like, we need a hit single. There's no anthemic hit single. And so in like literally like 15 minutes, he writes Cherry Pie.
Yeah.
And just launch them into the next, you know, level of fame and stardom. But at the same time, it was a double-edged sword because, you know, he said over and over in many, many interviews, he's like, now I'm the Cherry Pie guy. I'm hosting Cherry Pie contests. I'm doing that, you know,
yeah.
all these, you know, it was a song that he just slammed together for the record company and it just was never able to escape it.
Yeah.
Dude. And you gotta, you know, I think it really troubled him. He had a lot of, you know, dependence issues later in life, and it eventually took him. But, you know, I think that was a big part of his problem, too, was just, you know, he wanted to be taken seriously, you know, and he was a phenomenal musician and a great songwriter. But he was forever known now as the yeah. Cherry Pie guy.
Yeah, Janie Lane, yeah. And, you know, even I remember when that song came out and seeing the video and, you know, I'm a young man, you know,
sure,
you
know,
and I
Brown
see that video
there,
and even I'm like, this is a bit too much. It's a little too obvious. Like I just can't go on this ride, man.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Right. Never had credibility again, unfortunately.
Yep.
Because you're right. There were some great songs on that album, like Uncle Tom's Cabin.
Oh, sure.
Which is, yeah,
absolutely. That song rules. I love yeah. that song to this day. And then they put out Dog Eat Dog after that. And they had a couple more albums. But then by that time, it was, you know, the grunge thing was happening. And,
yeah.
you know, all of those bands just got, you know, the door slammed in their face. And so that was pretty much it. And then, like I said, yeah, you know, Janie Lane struggled with alcoholism and drug addiction later on in life and passed away at a far too young age. But man, those first couple records, though, like I said, God, they were so close to just
yeah.
making that leap into the really, really big, big bands. But
yeah, dude. Even yeah. Down Boys is still catchy as hell to me.
Oh, hell yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Wow.
So yeah, man, there you go. There's some bands that didn't quite get as big as the Motleys and the Guns yeah. N' Roses and the bands like that. But God, A lot of great music back then.
Yeah. But yeah, we still love those bands. We hope you do too. And if you don't know about them, go check them out. And just get into it, man. Don't worry about the look or any of the image in
that shit.
Yeah,
forget all that.
Listen to the music.
Yep. Forget about it. You know what? Don't even look at pictures of the band. Just put the music on. Right. You know, find them on Spotify. Don't read anything. Don't look at the picture. Just listen to it.
Don't go to YouTube and watch videos. Just listen to the music.
Exactly. And also, we had put together a list of some honorable mentions, too. We won't go into detail about these bands, but if you're going to do the deep dive, like we're recommending, I mean, check out bands like Shotgun Messiah.
Ooh.
Is another one.
Oh, my God. What a band.
They were so, so good.
Dude, Heartbreak and then just Boulevard.
Yeah. And then they were one of those bands too that just got heavier and heavier too. Yep. They ended up like an industrial project, very Nine Inch Nails-y later on in their career. But man, Shotgun Messiah, so freaking good.
Yeah, dude. I mean, can't forget about, you know, one of the bands that started the whole thing. Can't forget about Quiet Riot.
Oh, of course.
Got it. Yeah. Do the dive on them.
Yeah, absolutely. Dangerous Toys.
Yes.
Remember Dangerous Toys? Sporting the Woody.
Tease and Pleasing.
Scared. Yeah, Tease and Pleasing.
Scared was a great song. That was like, I remember really like Scared had a message. And I remember at the time, you know, like, ooh, they're actually like not telling me to go party. They're quite the opposite, actually.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, they were a lot of fun. Got Slaughter.
Slaughter, yeah. Up All Night.
Vinnie Vincent Invasion was where Dana Strum and Mark Slaughter originally worked together.
Yeah.
And Bobby Rock, too, on drums.
Yeah.
Couldn't work with the maniac Vinnie Vincent any longer, so they left and started their own thing. So Slaughter's another one.
Yeah, dude. Extreme.
Oh, Extreme.
Huge.
God, man. I just saw them this past year in Dallas with Living Color. What a show.
Oh, my God.
To this day, both of those bands still killing it.
Yeah, Nuno Bettencourt is still one of the greatest guitarists alive.
Ever. Yeah.
Sick.
Yeah. He's amazing.
Dude, what about like White Lion?
Oh, White Lion. Ooh. There's another band with some serious fucking players, man.
Yeah, dude. Vito Bratta. God,
Vito Bratta on guitar. He was a very, very Eddie Van Halen-esque, you know, the finger tapping.
And,
James Lomenzo on bass is currently the bass player in Megadeth.
Get the
How about
fuck
that?
Out.
You go from White Lion to Megadeth.
Yeah, dude, Salty Dog.
Salty Dog. Oh my God. I still have that on vinyl, dude. I love that band.
Come
Salty
along.
Salty Dog. Yeah, oh come God. Along. Sweet little baby, she's my hot dog bun. What?
What? Who writes that?
Oh, dude, here's one for you. The only Christian band that I'm aware of that went platinum, fucking Striper.
Striper.
Dude, I will fully admit, while I couldn't give two shits about the message, I really didn't care about any of that. I loved Striper back in the day, dude.
Yeah.
Again, talk about amazing musicians and amazing songwriters. And Michael Sweet to this day, dude, maybe it's Clean Living, whatever, but that dude can still sing just like he did, like just like it's 1987 all over again, dude.
Yeah.
He's amazing. I saw them a couple years ago here too. And so, so good. But yeah, Striper.
Yeah, dude, we've mentioned her a couple times on the podcast. Lita Ford.
Oh, yeah, dude.
Yeah, Lita Ford's fucking incredible.
Coming out of the Runaways, like a sort of punky rock, you know, band, all-girl band, and then strikes on her own and does the, you know, the LA kind of sound duets with Ozzy and God worked with Lemmy from Motorhead. Yep. Like,
She's badass, man.
Dude. Yeah. I love her.
Yeah, man. Love it. All right. We got something special here tonight. since we're talking about some of our favorite music from the '80s, we're going to bring in a friend of ours who we've talked about quite a bit on the podcast.
Yes. You may have heard his name once or twice, especially reminiscing about old times.
We refer to him as Bob Lava. he's been with us since way back in the day, going to concerts and enjoying all this music. And without any further ado, let's bring him in. Ladies and gentlemen, Bob Lava.
Bob Lava.
Hey, how y'all doing?
Fantastic, man.
Nice.
Happy to finally get you on the podcast, man. This is going to be fun.
Yeah.
You know, I'm actually here to bring some thunder to this lightning round.
Oh, I see what you did there, Bob.
That's right, Bob.
Yeah.
Well, first, before we get to the action, let's...
Yeah.
Bob, you know, Bob is many things, but he's also... the star player in what we've known for years. Every weekend we're together. It's a nonstop Bob weekend.
Yes, that's true.
Where every song we hear, we insert Bob's name into the lyrics.
Yes.
And it goes on for days.
Oh, yeah. And it as stupid as that sounds, it is one of the funniest, stupidest, ridiculous things that we do. And, but we never seem to run out of like ways to impress ourselves by incorporating Bob's name into songs.
Yeah, it's become a musical lifestyle, hasn't it? Over the last
it really
few
has.
Decades.
That's a great way to put it.
Yeah, thank you.
It's not just something we did as kids. We are grown ass men, and we're still doing this.
Well, we never truly grow up all the way. So.
That's true.
No, that's fair.
Fair point, Bob. Fair point. And back in the day, Bob used to host a little festival every summer called Bob Fest, where several bands would play. We'd be out playing jarts, having a good time. Always enjoyed Bob Fest.
Yeah, that was a good time back in those years.
Yeah, man, definitely.
Yeah, Bob got a cease and desist from Sharon Osbourne because it was just too close to Ozfest.
We tried to top him, just couldn't do it.
Many, many court battles later, he was able to keep it.
Right. Exactly.
As Bob alluded to, Bob is here for the Ride the Lightning Round.
Yeah.
We have a special round for Bob, sort of based on what our previous conversation was for the episode, talking about music from the 80s and that era, and Bob being, you know, a big fan of that time and that music. We're going to torture him a little bit with the lightning round.
Yes.
I'm ready. Bring it on.
Okay, Bob. So we're going to tag team this one here. We're both going to run a bunch of this or that questions by you, and you can't take too much time to think. You just got to keep moving. Once we get through it, if you want to go back and defend or explain anything, you can.
All right. I'm ready.
Are you ready?
All right.
Okay, here we go.
Let's do it. Here we go.
Guns N' Roses or Motley Crue?
Motley Crue.
Dokken or Lynch Mob?
Oh, I'm going to go with Dokken.
Ooh.
Mm. Winger or Trickster?
Oh, I'm going to go with Winger on that one.
All right. Steve Vai or Eddie Van Halen?
Oh, boy, I'm going to stick with Eddie. Yeah. Long live Van Halen. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. The subject of this one is assless chaps. David Lee Roth or Vince Neil?
Oh, wow. I'm going to say David Lee Roth because he wore those assless chaps like no other ass could, I guess.
And of the two, he's the only one that could still pull off assless chaps, let's be honest.
Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly.
All right. Bob, the category is Def Leppard. 9 arms or 10?
I'm going to go with 10.
You liked him better with 10 arms. Okay, fair enough.
Fair enough. Okay. Striper or Nelson?
Striper.
Live concerts, Bob. Think carefully. Okay. Drum solos or guitar solos?
My heart was with guitar solos.
You son of a bitch.
Oh, my God.
I'm sorry.
You son of a... Well, you got some balls coming on here and saying that.
Oh, boy.
Okay, Bob, here we go. Too Fast for Love or Shout at the Devil?
Oh, I'm going to say Shout at the Devil.
All right. And we're going to end with the probably most important topic of the evening. Who had better hair? John Bon Jovi or David Coverdale?
Oh, yeah. I'm going to say John Bon Jovi.
All right.
Okay. Yep.
All right.
All right.
There
Bob.
You go, Bob.
True. Yeah.
All right.
First Ride the Lightning Round. Well done.
Nice. I passed.
Well, nice. The beautiful thing is, you know, we're not that smart either. So there's no right or wrong answer. That's why it's by design. But,
exactly.
Bob, do you want to go back and go through the list and like explain any of your answers or justify anything? Clarify.
Well, first, let's go back to the guitar solo versus drum solo. But
I thought you might.
Now, that one kind of ripped into me, but I just went with, I turned my brain off and just went with that first.
It's all right, man.
Instinct,
I get it.
You know?
I get it.
I remember, you know, just guitar solos a little more than drum solos, but there were some really great drum solos out there in those concerts, but you couldn't really, in my opinion, beat the guitar solos that we've all seen and heard for decades.
That's fair. That's fair.
Fair.
Yeah. And also, too, David Coverdale had great hair. I went with Bon Jovi because, that's just from what I remember. Yeah.
I respect the Eddie Van Halen choice. That is, I mean, as far
Yeah.
as, speaking of guitar solos, I mean, Steve Vai he's just from another planet too, but yeah,
Yeah.
I mean, Eddie was the man. I
Yeah,
mean,
he was definitely amongst like the best of the best of the best. So,
absolutely.
and Steve Vai, yeah, incredible. I remember a couple of those solos. You're like, how is that even possible? But Eddie
Yeah.
just had eruption in every other solo he did. It was amazing.
Yeah, and such an innovator, and
Right, right.
literally invented techniques that other guitar players do now, like it's second nature, but he
Exactly,
invented a lot
yeah.
of that shit, so
Yeah,
yeah.
exactly.
And you went came out of the gate taking Motley Crue over Guns N' Roses. Respect.
Yes.
Yep.
Yep. Yeah,
Yep.
Motley Crue was first in my life and in my heart, I guess, as well. So,
Yeah.
Nice.
yeah.
And I think God, the one that would have got me was Winger or Trickster. I would
Yeah.
probably still be debating that.
Yeah, I didn't know much about Trickster as much as Winger, but it's gonna haunt me tonight. I might be thinking about that at 4 in the morning when
Yeah, you're gonna wake up at like
I'm
4 in the morning
learning.
and be like, did I really nail that one or not?
Yeah, I know, right?
Oh, that's great.
No, great
And
question.
you like 10-Armed Def Leppard over
Yeah.
9-Armed
Yeah, old school. I don't know. I just
Def
a lot changed back in during that
stupid question.
time. For a second though, I thought you meant fingers, but like, all right.
Oh man.
Yeah.
Oh dude, well that was fun, man. Nice
Yeah,
job.
that was fun. Thank you for that. That
Yeah, dude. I mean,
was
shit,
awesome,
we'll have
man.
to. Thanks for coming on, man. We're gonna have to get you on for a full episode at some point, but
Yeah,
Oh,
for
okay.
sure.
Awesome
Yeah,
to
I'd be
have you
definitely
on for the
looking
lightning round.
forward to that. Hell yeah, dude.
Yeah, dude, right on.
Yeah,
Nice.
thanks for having me on, and I hope I was as much entertaining as you guys are always entertaining me.
Oh man, always, dude.
And we'll keep rocking those nonstop Bob Weekends.
For sure.
Oh shit, we're doing
There
that shit. We'll be at the old folks' home doing that shit.
Oh my God, yeah.
you
Never gonna end.
go.
For
Right,
sure.
never gonna end.
All right, Bob, stick around for a second. We're gonna wrap things up here with a couple of shout outs.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, man, we got some new listeners. Tower Hamlets in the UK.
Nice.
Abu Dhabi.
All right.
Oh. Panama City, Panama.
Okay.
Lakewood Ranch, Florida.
Cool.
Round Rock, Texas, and Renton, Washington. So, thank you,
Nice.
everybody. And I may have screwed that up. That may be Panama City, Florida.
Oh, well, didn't I just say we're not that smart?
Dude, I don't know how to read map. I don't. Anyways, yeah. So when you get a chance, please, if you enjoy the show, subscribe to us, either on any podcast platform or on YouTube. Rate us, review us, check us out on the socials. Again, I mentioned YouTube, and we're on Instagram. But again, just want to thank everybody for listening, and thank everybody who's just posting really great comments to some of the videos that we're posting on YouTube. We love all that positive energy, so keep it coming.
All right. Well, once again, Bob Lovett, thank you so much for joining us.
All right, thanks for having me, guys.
All right,
All
man. We
right,
will talk
Bob.
to you soon. And this is the Greatest Mixtape Podcast. My name's Eric.
Yeah, my name is Mac.
And we're out of here. We'll talk to you soon.
Woo!